Hi everyone, welcome to this week's episode of No Such Thing as a Fish, where we were joined by the absolutely brilliant Lou Sanders. Now, you'll remember Lou because she's been on Fish a couple of times, I think. She's been on QI many, many times. She's an absolute favourite of ours. She's so, so funny, so, so brilliant. There's loads of things I could tell you about her. She's written books, she's on tour next year, but really the best place to find out everything about her is to go to Lou Sanders, that's LouSanders.com, and all of the information about her is there if you want to learn more, which I bet you will, because she is a real tour de force and she definitely shows that off in this episode today. And of course, it would be remiss of me not to mention Club Fish. Go to patreon.com/nosuchthingasafish and find out everything there is to get there. There is merch, there's bonus stuff. Oh, there's all sorts. You know where to go. patreon.com/nosuchthingasafish and find out more. Not much more to say apart from on with the podcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of No Such Thing as a Fish, a weekly podcast coming to you from the QI offices in Holborn. My name is Dan Schreiber. I am sitting here with Andrew Hunter Murray, James Harkin, and Lou Sanders. And once again, we have gathered around the microphones with our four favorite facts from the last 7 days. And in no particular order, here we go. Starting with fact number one, and that is Lou.
Well, you're more likely to get your way if you ask someone for a favor in the right ear and not the left ear. It's called right ear dominance.
Oh. Okay.
So, yeah.
Interesting where we're sat. You're speaking into Andy's right ear and into our left ears.
Can I get more money for the podcast?
Yeah. Yes.
It wouldn't work if I asked Dan that.
No.
Right ear dominance. Is this like being... like left or right-handed or left or right-footed?
It's to do with the hemispheres of the brain. Okay. And now I'll consult my phone.
You got the main bits right without looking it up.
Yeah, I was quite impressed with myself, actually. Yeah. So it's called right ear advantage. I said that, didn't I? For verbal commands and persuasion. Can you imagine sort of like looping round and going through the other ear to sort of ask?
Yeah, you've got to do it subtly.
Yes.
You've got to make your way over.
Getting out of the bed. Going round to her side.
Yeah.
It does make sense to sleep on the right side of the bed. If you
right,
want
yes. Oh,
that
yeah,
is, that is clever. How That's we're positioned clever. In bed.
Is that right?
Life. Yes.
I don't want to hear how you're positioned in bed.
Who speaks into whose right ear?
Fenella will talk into my right ear.
I heard it was top to tail with you.
I thought it was you on the top bunk.
That's very cool. Yeah. That's a very good idea. You would see now, I wonder if you look at classic photos of big business meals and so on, whether or not you see, you know, who's on the right side of Trump, for example.
Who's on the right side of history?
So do we know why this?
Well, let me consult AI. I'm afraid it is. Now when you search engine something, AI comes up first, which is annoying because they're using all the water. Don't get me started. Language, left hemisphere dominance. Language and verbal information are primarily processed by the left hemisphere of the brain in most people. The right ear is more directly wired to the left hemisphere. Faster processing. Information received, this is interesting, through the right ear reaches the language processing center in the left hemisphere more quickly. I don't know. Oh, here we go. This is more interesting. A study conducted in Italian nightclubs where researchers asked clubbers for a cigarette in their left ear or right ear found that requests made in their right ear were twice as successful.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
I'd say I don't want a cigarette in my left ear. No, thank you.
Italian nightclubs, the cradle of science.
I've done my own research in there. No further, come on.
Well, one of us sitting around this table, for a particular reason, has better hearing than the other three, irrespective of age or hearing damage.
Okay. Oh, is it women have better hearing?
Women have better hearing than men.
Because we are supposed to get up for the baby, I suppose.
That'll be it.
Oh, damn it.
Is it better hearing in terms of, like, you know, the higher a sound goes and then only dogs can hear it? Do they have a higher range?
That's for sure they do.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's also play a sound at any part of the range and women will be more likely to perceive it than men.
And our eyes are better as well. So we can see more colours than men.
Yes.
Isn't that, like, why are we so downtrodden when we're actually better? I suppose you're stronger.
Yeah. Yeah. You've put all
But we're emotionally stronger.
If someone's fighting you, you can't say, oh, I can see 20 colours here. It doesn't really help in the fight.
But we're emotionally stronger.
That's true.
So you tell me. How often are you getting into fights? And how often are you seeing and hearing things? Every day you're seeing and hearing things.
True.
Fights, even you. Not 1 month, is it?
I am from the north. One interesting thing about women having better hearing is they can hear higher things. And that means that there was a thing where people were making household appliances and they'd have a very high sort of hum. But the people who were making them were often men. So the men couldn't hear it. And then they'd sell them and the women were using them. This is like in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
And the women could hear the hums.
That's like the, is it called Invisible Women, that book?
Yes.
Caroline Craper. And it's all about how things are not built with women in mind. But that's so funny that men have been making like screaming blenders that are imperceivable to them.
Another way to terrorize us. Congratulations.
It's weird that this was done in Italian nightclubs.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a big history of...
Make your pleasure your job, you know?
Yeah.
Make your passion your job.
I think there's a big history of Italian ear science.
Really?
Yeah. So Alessandro Volta was the count, Italian count.
He invented the battery.
Invented the battery and he did a lot of electrical experimentation. And he was one of the pioneers of electrifying ears.
Why was he electrifying ears?
He was electrifying everything he could get his hands on. But
he invented the battery. What are you going to do?
Yeah, that's his USP.
He's basically going around nightclubs just battering people.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, but there were lots of Italian pioneers.
Here's another thing. Two people around this table will have better hearing than the other two.
Irrespective of Lou.
Forgetting about the male-female thing. Forgetting about age.
Irrespective of
Me and Lou, because we live by the sea.
You got it. Well, not
really?
Living in the city... Actually, people who live in the city have better hearing.
Oh, so you and me, James?
Yes, sorry.
That's right. Sorry, guys.
And this is according to a study at the University of Gießen in Germany. And they found that people in quiet villages, they don't have so good hearing because they don't have to fight over the traffic and stuff all the time.
Right.
And the absolute worst hearing of anyone in the world, where do you think they live?
Wales.
The quietest place?
Quietest, but then there's an extra thing on top. It's not Wales.
It's quiet, but there's a background noise. So, like, near a nuclear reactor, because it's low population, but the nuclear reactor's humming?
It's not that. It's East Asian villagers, because they have a very quiet life, but every now and then they get huge firework displays, and that really damages their hearing, but then they also have the quiet thing.
I was looking into ears, inevitably landed on Van Gogh, because that's where all ear research will get you to. Sure. And I was reading about when he was getting his ear treated after after an injury to it. And I can't tell if this was the injury where he lobbed it off or if he had another injury where he just cut it with a razor and needed it looked after. Either way, he saw a doctor called Dr. Felix Ray. And as a thank you, he gave Dr. Felix Ray a portrait of Dr. Felix Ray. So he did one over a number of days, handed to him to say, yeah, really beautiful painting. I've seen it. Dr. Ray hated it, as did his wife.
Oh, wow.
So for the next 10 years, they used it to block up a hole that was in the chicken coop that they had outside their house.
Did they have the painting on the inside of the coop or the outside?
Not sure. And that's where it stayed for 10 years. It was eventually sold off and it's now in a museum and it's estimated to be worth about 50 million. But at the time,
did they get the money for it? Did they get some money for it?
I think it got... You know, just handed on to someone else. If they got any money, it would have been a small amount.
I should have kept that fan art that someone sent me with a boggly eye. They tagged me in. I thought, I'm not reposting that. Have a word with yourself. If you do make fan art, people you want them to repost it, make it on the right side of flattering.
Sure. Here's another really famous ear from science history.
Okay.
The ear on the rat.
The ear on the rat.
The ear of the rat.
Of the rat.
Does anyone ever
remember
this?
Yes, I do remember.
An ear was grown on the back of a rat. Yeah.
The ear was grown on the back of a rat.
A human ear.
A human ear was grown on the back of a rat. And science has been doing this for at least 20 years on and off. The first one was done in 1997.
Wow.
I think there was a scientist, the original, the Vacanti mouse. I think the scientist was Joseph Vacanti.
Italian?
May have been Italian. It certainly sounds Italian, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, they love the ears, don't they?
Yeah. And he was a pediatric surgeon. And one of his colleagues said, we really struggle with recreating good ears for children. If a child's lost an ear in an accident or something, it's really hard to shape the cartilage to make it accurate.
Yeah, because you can't hear out, the mouse can't hear out of that massive ear on its back, can it?
No.
Because it's not like, it's not a working ear. It's just the outside bit. Like,
it's the pinna, it's you the call shell, it. Exactly. It's the kind of the external. Yeah. And they grow it. And they would put a frame on the mouse or the rat that grows the ear.
Ah, so it grows into the shape of the ear because there's a mold.
Yes, it's like forcing a cucumber into the right shape.
I didn't know that detail. I just thought.
Yeah.
Did you actually think it was like the mouse is going, fuck, you know, shut up, will you?
I didn't
think I've got a massive fucking ear on my back.
I didn't think it was necessarily functioning.
I don't have any cigarettes to give you. I'm sorry. No, but so, and his weirdly, the Vacanti and his brother had both worked on the same problem, but they keep doing it. And the latest one, I think, was in 2016. And they said, well, we're going to move to human trials soon.
Yeah.
As in growing the ears on animals and then implanting them into humans. And so far, the trail has gone cold, I believe.
So can we just grow a whole human if we put it in a mold? If you put a mold of a human.
No.
There is a market for that.
Is there?
Well, it doesn't do anything, does it? But it's a human doll.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes. Because like the ear, it would just be the shape.
Yeah.
But I don't think those are grown on the backs of mice, as far as I understand.
No, that's
sex
true.
Dolls.
Well, you couldn't put a human body on the back of a mice. It would topple over.
Yes, absolutely. What, the human? Yeah, well, everyone. Yeah.
Also, it wouldn't be able to get back into its hole, would it? Because the human would be too
big. This is, you know, it's obvious. It's obvious. It's a terrible idea.
Yeah,
I don't have to be the one to say that. Come on, boys. Come on, you're supposed to be brainy. You can't grow a hair body on a mouse. Come on, get real.
And we've been doing it for, as you say, since 1997.
Yep.
Multiple years.
But no ear has ever gone from a mouse to a human.
I believe not.
Time to move on.
I think it's time to double down. I think we must be
get the bot on the mouse camp. But also, you always read things in the paper that says, oh, they've figured out a way to do this, and then you don't hear any more about it. I think it's like to give us a bit of a lift and a bit of a story, but they're not really planning on doing anything with it. Like the thing that ate plastic,
the little bacteria.
Yeah, where's that gone?
I think it's probably in...
Well, no one's talking about it.
It made Legoland disappear, didn't it?
Yeah. they give us a bit of good news.
Yeah.
Like, oh, they've saved sight or something, I read the other day.
Right.
Come on, then.
It's always very early developments, isn't it?
And don't
then they
waste
say,
my
can
time.
We roll this out?
Yeah, come back to me.
It's because they need to do the headlines to get funding, don't they?
Yes.
So they do the big, oh, we're going to save this.
Yeah.
The newspapers say, we're going to save this. And they're like, no, we just really just wanted a few grand for some experiments to buy some more mice.
On the hearing front, what is it with people that talk really loudly? I've got two friends that talk so loudly. They must be deaf, mustn't they?
Fenella says that I talk extremely loudly. And I don't think I do.
No.
She's always going on about how loud I am.
You shout at her a lot.
When I've
been with you guys. So that might be what's coming.
Oh, that's what she's talking about, my rage.
Yeah.
Have you not got like 15 kids to shout over?
We do. And also when you're sleeping top to tail, it does take.
Yeah.
Then can you, the blankets. Yeah. We should move on soon.
Oh.
Feel like we haven't done any facts.
Oh, we've done loads.
Oh, we've done tons. Okay.
If you've got bigger ears, do you think you hear better or worse or the same?
Better.
Better.
You're right. It's one of those facts that's just what you would imagine.
But it's so enjoyable that that's the case.
Yeah.
That big ears mean
it's
only,
better hearing. It's very, very slight. It's 15 decibels difference, which is basically, you can't really tell the difference.
Really?
But yeah, it does make a difference.
Like if you have a bigger nose, can you smell better? Probably not, right? Because it doesn't necessarily mean your receptors are any better.
But you can take more air in one sniff.
Why don't you let us know, Dan?
Okay, wait. Dan's got a big, big nose. I've got a small nose.
Yep. If
Andy, you make a smell and we'll see who smells it first.
Yeah.
Just make a smell.
Make a smell right now.
I'm doing it.
If you can smell it at home, do let us know. podcast@qi.com.
Okay, it is time for fact number two, and that is James.
Okay, my fact this week is that the town of Ramsgate is named after a gate for ravens.
Very confusing.
That's so cool.
It is really cool.
Well, I think it is.
Why do ravens need a gate?
It's a gap in the cliffs. where the ravens go in.
I thought you were going to say it's a gap in the market.
We think it comes from the old English word gate, meaning gate, mm-hmm. and hrafen, which means raven, and that became Ramsgate. Hrafen also sometimes means warlord, so it could be Gate of the Warlord.
Ooh.
And Daniel Defoe thought that Ramsgate was originally called Roman's Gate, and it's where the Romans landed. Because it was actually where the Romans landed, but we're pretty sure that isn't true.
But can we just say, for international listeners who don't know...
Or listeners from the north.
Or listeners from the north or west of England or other parts of the UK who may not know about the bustling metropolis of Ramsgate, what Ramsgate is.
Yeah. Well, it's part of Thanet, which is on the southeast coast.
That's a circular.
No, it's because it's quite connected to quite a few places that you may have heard of. Margate, Broadstairs, and Ramsgate kind of come as a trio. You've got Westgate as well.
It's a town. It's a town on
That's
the,
what you were trying to get
a
to.
It's a town on the east coast. Just say it. If you want us to say it's a town, you say it.
I just think that's referencing Can Broadstairs I just say, and Margate.
Andy, the fact was the town of Ramsgate.
God. You're right. You're absolutely right. It's a classic English seaside town in many ways.
It is.
And it's lovely. And it's so interesting. I had no idea how interesting it is.
Is it where you live, Lou?
No.
Or you
no.
Have Do you have there? A link?
No, I've not. I no idea what you're talking about. I would live there from 2 to 4. Then I moved next door to Broadstairs. Right. Now I live in Margate, so I'm doing the trilogy.
Oh.
Is that going up market or down market to go?
Well, they all changed. So Ramsgate was a dive. And then Broadstairs is a bit fancier. And then Margate was a dive, but now it's fancier.
Mm. You know
it's
what?
Cooler.
Regular listeners will know about Margate because Dan goes on about it so much.
Yeah, because I live there. Not just because
I'm
fancy.
It's nice.
Really excitingly, I went to see a school today. It's one that my daughter might go to. And they said that every year they take all the kids on a trip to Margate. Oh. And I got to say, sold.
Yeah,
wow.
Great.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I think if it was a trip to Ramsgate... That'd be even better.
For your podcast.
Because
it's stunningly interesting. It's one of those towns where it's reasonably close to London. And then for a spell in the 18th and 19th century, it was one of the most fashionable places on the planet.
Mm.
Incredibly beautiful buildings, incredibly rich history in terms of connections to Europe.
It's got Waitrose.
It's got a Waitrose.
Mm. Charles Darwin had a flat, did a lot of his barnacle research in the area.
Amazing.
Van Gogh.
Oh, and that brings it.
Of chicken coop fame.
Wow.
Himself spent 3 months as a teacher in Ramsgate.
A lot of artists do go to the area because the light is very beautiful. Yeah. You see the sun rise in Ramsgate and you see the sun set in Margate.
Oh, right.
Something to do with geography.
Teaching assistant, I think.
Teaching assistant.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, he was a TA.
Yeah. Who was?
Van Gogh.
Oh,
imagine being the teacher in the class where Van Gogh is a teaching assistant.
I know.
That's quite tricky. If you're the art teacher, as I'm presuming he was, and you're trying to teach something, he's in the back being
absolutely
a bit weird,
cutting
his ear off.
But it was also branded in World War I as the most bombed seaside town in the UK. Basically, the first blitzes hit Ramsgate, and they had an amazing way of dealing with that, which I'm sure, Andy, you must have read into and enjoyed, the tunnels that they built. Yeah.
Oh.
Just tunneled into the cliffs. They dug, and I think it was for the Second World War was the big bombing raids, although there were some in the First World War. But the Second World War, they just dug this cave complex into the cliffs. I think they could get 60,000 people down there.
They could. Wow. I didn't know this, and I've been to these caves. Well, I've been to the gift shop. We didn't quite make it into the caves.
No.
But we were going back.
Isn't the gift shop usually at the end of this spectacle?
You were trying to get in for free by going in through the gift shop.
Walking backwards through the turnstile.
So what's it selling, a rock?
Yeah, it's like a model of a cave. Yeah. What is it?
No, it's where you actually buy the tickets to go into the cave, but they can only take you as a tour group, so you can't just wander in. So it's huge, and initially why it was built was it goes deep into away from the ocean inland, and it was for the local town members to have a tunnel that would get them straight to the seaside. So it wasn't built initially for the bombing,
but they already live at the seaside.
But it's just a quick way rather than going through the town.
Well, underground.
Yeah, because there was a little railway.
Yeah, it was trains and trams.
Exactly.
And stuff like that,
I'll go above ground. What if you need to pop to boots or something? I'd go.
Also, people are going to piss in that tunnel.
Yeah.
Surely not. Yeah. Surely not in Ramsgate.
Oh, well, do you want a story about Ramsgate that's not very highbrow.
Yes, please.
Oh, okay.
Years ago, I was thinking, why don't I just buy in Ramsgate? This was like years and years ago. And I thought, it's quite nice. And then I was seriously considering it. And then I went to the toilet at Ramsgate Station before I got on the train, and someone had done a shit aloft of the radiator in the waiting room.
Aloft of the radiator?
Yeah, it's just they positioned themselves on top of the radiator. So the toilet was like 2 seconds through a door, toilet's there. Yeah. But they said, no, what I'll do is pull down my pants in the waiting room and just poop on a radiator.
You don't get that in Broadstairs, do you?
You don't get that so much in Broadstairs.
Definitely human.
Well, I haven't got time to do them all.
Do you know the world's biggest Wetherspoons is in Ramsgate?
I go there probably once a week.
Do you actually?
I do. I don't
because he was like a pioneer of Brexit.
But you can get a pint of Ruddles for £1.20 on every month.
Here we go.
Yeah, it does. It's grade two listed.
Yeah.
It's
1,500 people it can hold, which is the same as Shakespeare's Globe.
Wow.
It's an old ballroom.
Different audience.
Yeah, it's an old ballroom and it's really beautiful. It's right on the beach.
I've been there.
Yeah,
it's lovely.
Yeah.
It's a great big pub.
Mm.
It's true.
I'm with Lou. It's a shithole.
And it's a 2-minute walk from the caves, by the way, if anyone...
There's some lovely little independent wine bars up the road. Say that.
Do you know the Home for Smack Boys?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
That's in Ramsgate.
What is it?
It's, what does it sound like?
Where my exes congregate.
Hey!
No, come on. No, come on.
Smack boys were people who worked on smacks, weren't they?
Yeah, fishing boats. Fishing smacks.
Yeah.
Right.
And they went out with boys as young as sort of probably about 14 were going out working on the fishing boats. And so this was a place to give them food and accommodation and, you know, stability.
Yeah. But still, if you walk across from this building, it still has the words like something like Home of the Smack Boys on the side, which if you don't know what that means is quite confusing.
Yeah.
What it's attached to is the Sailor's Church, which is this tiny church. You could fit about 30 people in there. I've been into it multiple times. I've never seen a service done there, but I started reading into it. And there's reviews by, and I didn't know this was a thing, mystery worshippers.
Wow.
So it's like mystery shoppers.
Yeah.
Isn't that great? So,
no.
You would have mystery shoppers who would do their thing. Mystery worshippers are people who go into a church, they experience it, and they report back on a survey that they're questioned about.
Did you connect with the Almighty?
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. Level of spiritual...
Well, questions are like, how full was the building? Did anyone welcome you personally? Were the pews comfortable? And the person who filled it in was slightly odd. Was the pews comfortable? The pews had very low back support, so I thought on balance, no, it was uncomfortable.
Off balance, more like, gone.
Yeah. Did the service make you feel glad to be a Christian? I didn't feel miserable. That's an accomplishment.
Wow.
That's the answer.
As someone who used to regularly go to church,
yeah.
If any new person came into our church, everyone would know.
Yeah.
Because it would always be the same family. Everyone would sit in the same places and stuff like that. If someone sat in your place, you would know immediately that they were a secret
mystery worshipper.
Mystery worshipper.
That's the smallest church in the world, maybe, is in Dover, just up the road.
Really?
Cool.
I think so. I mean, every time someone asks me if that's really true, I panic, but I think that's true.
How small are we talking?
Tiny.
Can it fit one person in?
Do you want me
Lots
to Google
of people.
It? Because obviously I've not got the answers.
Hey, Andy, I thought you would hate Ramsgate because your hero hated Ramsgate.
Jane Austen.
Correct.
Really? Why?
Well, she thought it was a place of disrepute, as seaside resorts were in her day, really.
Sure. Yeah.
And apparently, according to Kent historian Norman Thomas, she mentions it in Pride and Prejudice and Mansfield Park, and she's never complimentary in either. I've not read any Jane Austen, so...
I think it's where Mr. Darcy's sister is nearly seduced by Mr. Wickham. I think it happens in Ramsgate.
Is that the place... Is that the one where Mr. Darcy leaves a turd on a radiator?
Yeah, that's right. And that's when Lizzie Bennet knows that he's the one. Yeah.
I think her brother lived down there for a while. Captain Austen.
Yes. She had a load of brothers who were Navy or military. And I think it was a place where... Have you heard... You know this thing, scarlet fever? Not the disease. is where it's basically...
Sorry, just cut out everything I said about the smallest.
If, listener, if you wonder why Lou's been quiet for the last couple of minutes.
No, it's one of the smallest working churches in England. Dover's tiny chapel of St. Edmund of Abingdon is the only church still in existence that was dedicated... And by that point, you get quite bored.
Right. Got it.
You get the idea. There's a small church in Dover.
It's a small church.
Yeah, get over it. Sorry, what were you saying?
Nothing important.
I got quite a nice message, which is something that usually would be reserved for Drop Us a Line, but a listener who runs a local thing called Margate Mushrooms. So yeah. As Andy and James will know, I've been taking lion's mane mushrooms. It's a little drip to help your concentration.
Dan, we have to keep this for the advertising bit of the show. We have to put it in the ad breaks. We can't just work it in.
Well, it turns out the person who makes this stuff listens to our show. I had no idea. And she messaged me. She listened to our episode about crafts that are going endangered and virtually out. Ramsgate is home to one of the very few chainmail makers living in the UK. So a guy named Nick Chexfield, so he has a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Heritage Crafts Association. And she was saying, because she knows him, or certainly has spoken to him, and she was saying he is so good at understanding chainmail that if he looks at old, centuries-old chainmail, he can tell if the maker was right or left-handed. He can tell if they were getting tired as they were making it.
But who's fact-checking him? You know what I mean? Like, I could go on and go like, yeah, okay, this guy's a Sagittarius. You know, well he's dead 100 years ago, so. Yeah. Actually, that's easier to fact-check. It's easier. Actually, that's really easy to fact-check.
Well, he's got a website, Nick Chexfield.
We've got a website, babe. No, it does sound good. And I would like some free mushroom drops as well.
Would you? Right. But check this out. The website, he has an advice hotline for if you have emergency questions about your chainmail.
Now this is going to come in useful. Do you mind if I just jot that down?
What circumstances do you need emergency advice about your chainmail? Like if 100 crossbow bolts are flying towards you.
Nick? Yeah. Oh,
okay. Does he sell much, do you think?
I don't know if he sells much. I assume the advice hotline is for people who are in museums who might have damaged a chainmail and they need some advice on what to immediately do.
He's doing some good work.
Yeah, he's doing great work. But anyway, that's a craft that's Ramsgate. Endangered and he's down there.
Ramsgate Hero.
Yeah.
Along with?
Oh, Bagpuss.
Really?
Broadstairs. Bagpuss was from Broadstairs.
Oh, Postgate.
Again, I will have to fact check that. And,
please.
Well, see you in a few minutes.
And then the podcast gets shorter.
Is that the guy who created Bagpuss?
Bagpuss himself.
Oliver Postgate, right?
Right.
I think.
Right. How do you retain all this information? This is crazy to me.
Yeah.
Well, the good thing is I can keep saying stuff, and if I get it wrong, I just cut it out.
Yeah. But I couldn't even remember that I booked acupuncture for myself the other day. It's fascinating.
That you will need to remove your chainmail for that.
Okay, it's time for fact number 3, and that is Andy.
My fact is, the scientist who won this year's Nobel Prize for Medicine didn't find out for nearly a day because he'd gone off-grid, and he only found out after his wife got 200 texts.
Wow.
So this is about Fred Ramsdell, who's an immunologist.
Yep.
And a very good one, clearly. Mm-hmm. And he and his wife, in October, they'd gone on a 3-week hike in Wyoming with their dogs, and they were having a whale of a time. And they'd gone off grid and they turned off their phones and they just had not paid any attention. And on the very last day, his wife started screaming and he thought, she's seen a bear, we're in big trouble. And it turns out she just got 200 text messages saying, can you please put your phone on? The Nobels are trying to contact you.
And that's why I won't ever turn my phone off in case I just win a Nobel Peace Prize.
Absolutely. Yeah,
and if you turn your phone off, you have Nobel on it. So,
brilliant. Yes.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Editing and laughing.
They've been trying to get in touch for 20 hours. And this is pretty much a new record for how long anyone's been able to stay away from the Nobel committee trying to contact you.
Right. Very amazing. I mean, quite often it becomes the viral thing when the Nobel Prizes are announced. Someone not picking up their phone.
Yeah, we love it.
This happened last year where a neighbor had to come over who happened to be a scientist at like 2 a.m. and was ringing the doorbell.
Yes.
To pick up your phone.
That was 2020. Yeah. That was Paul Milgrom.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear about Richard Ernst in 1991?
Please.
He was on a flight from Moscow back to the USA. He was asleep. It was a night flight. And he was woken up. He said, there's a phone call for you. He said, what do you mean there's a phone call for me? It's 1991. How could there be a phone call for me? And he said, leave me alone. Go back. I'm going back to sleep. I think they did have some phones on planes, but it wasn't a common thing to receive a call. He said, no, let me sleep. And they said, no, get up, sir. Come to the cockpit. And he went to the cockpit of this plane and he put on the radio set that the pilot handed him. And it was the Nobel Committee saying, you've just won the Nobel for chemistry.
Right. Wow.
Cool. Which is so
and then he's
cool.
dancing down the aisle. Yeah. Over. Think it are.
Yeah, he'd done the research underpinning MRI scanning. It was a big deal.
Yeah. There was a guy, Melvin Calvin, going slightly off memory here.
Sounds like you're going off memory. Sounds like a blank has been filled in.
He won it for, he won the science prize. And he was not, they weren't able to reach him because he was away secretly at a alien conference.
Right.
And it's not as weird as it sounds because it's where Carl Sagan and Frank Drake were, where the foundations of SETI were. So he was at the very first SETI meeting and they found out as SETI was being set up.
He was busy being probed. And they,
Yeah. And actually, Frank Drake was going to send off for some champagne. Mm. And it just so happened that the person who was the chauffeur for all of them to get them to this place was called French Beverage. And
Dan, what are you talking about?
And he thought, I can't send French Beverage to go get the champagne. That just feels too
the mushrooms
too
that you had, were they
so Melvin Calvin was the guy who won but was at an alien conference.
Well, not an alien conference, they were setting up SETI.
Yeah. Quite good that SETI rhymes with Yeti. Like, those are two of your big interests.
Yes, that's true. Didn't know that. That's a good point.
And spaghetti you like as well, don't you?
I love spaghetti. Yeah. The whole point is that they couldn't reach him and they got through to his wife, who then had to call the secret base order to mention it to him that he had won.
A lot of people think it's spam, don't they, or telemarketing when the Nobels ring up.
Oh, really?
Abdul Razak Gurnah, who won the literature prize a few years ago, they rang him and said, you've won the Nobel Prize. But before they could say anything, he said, leave me alone, and just slammed the phone down on them.
God.
I think Kazuo Ishiguro.
Yeah.
Same thing.
I bet.
Yeah.
God, so maybe you've already won it, Lou. You've just
been hanging up
on it.
So Off-Grid, which is where Fred Ramsdell was.
Mm.
What does that mean?
Well, I think it gets used wrong all the time.
Mm. I certainly use it wrong.
People say, I'm going off-grid.
Yeah.
And what they mean is, I won't have my phone on.
I'm putting on my out of office on my email.
Morrison's in Margate has got no reception. So that's off-grid.
There we go.
Yeah.
What it should mean is I'm
and
not
you do have
be...
to fend for yourself because some of those aisles are really mixed up.
But it should be I'm not going to be using public utilities.
Yes.
Like, I'm not going to be using public water or electricity supplies, but people don't use it to mean that anymore.
Self-sustainable is what I want to be.
Right.
So you have your own electricity, you have your own water source.
Mm.
I think they're the big two.
Those are the big two. Mm. Some kind of sewage system, if we're being fussy.
Yes. Or a radiator, at least.
Drying it out is half the battle. You either get rid of it or just dry it.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's mostly water weight. So are you interested in this kind of stuff?
I would love to keep doing my job and keep doing what I do, but then living in a few acres of land with my own water and electricity, solar system, all eco. I'd like to sort of have a little eco village. So I would like to be self-sustainable, but still, you know, pop on QI, etc. You know?
Yeah. You'll have to make your own QI, unfortunately.
You'll have to have
your own set built.
Just with chickens.
I still want to go to cafes, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not growing my own coffee beans.
I think that's fine.
I think that is off-grid.
There's one good way of getting power that a YouTuber called Chris Dole has done. You know vapes?
Love them.
Got them coming out of your ears. So vapes, they each have a tiny battery in them. Mm. But what people do is they vape them until you can vape no more and then you chuck them away. Mm. But then that means they're chucking away this tiny battery. And usually there's electricity left on it. So this guy, he salvaged 500 disposable vapes and turned the batteries into a working power wall, which powers basically all his stuff in his house.
Wow.
That's so good.
That's really cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not that many vapes as well. I don't know how fast you get through a vape.
500. Well, you get through about 20 a day, don't you?
Yeah, I do. They come with a certain number of puffs, don't they? And you can buy mega vapes, which are illegal, which have more puffs in them.
Really?
Yeah.
Mega vape.
I've never felt more, how do you do, fellow kids, than talking about vapes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think, and you can say to your like your news agent, or whatever, have you got any illegal vapes for me? And he'll go under the counter and pull out like a vape the size of a Toblerone.
Have you done it?
No, of course I've not done it.
How do you know this?
Andy, Toblerones come in all different sizes.
I'm so sorry. You're absolutely right. Pull out the size of an airport Toblerone.
Oh, right.
There we go. Okay.
Right. If yeah. I asked for a large Toblerone, would they have that under the counter as well?
They'll actually pull out a massive Toblerone. Right. They'll pull out an even bigger one. There's always a bigger one.
Under the counter.
No, I think they're meant to be legally, they have to be rechargeable now. But is people still throw them away because they can't be bothered to recharge them.
Because they're cheap.
Because they're cheap.
Lou, there's quite a few places that are kind of set up already for off-grid living. Would you ever consider just incorporating yourself into a place? The groundwork having been done?
Yes, but how am I going to be a cult leader if there's already...
Good point.
Well,
you kill the previous leader. Trial by combat.
Yeah. No, I'd want to do it with a couple of friends or something. So I don't know, maybe. But then would you have to deal with annoying people? I don't know.
Always. In life, always.
Yeah. Usually what happens with cults is either...
not actually a cult.
It's just James's shorthand. It doesn't mean anything
Let's
by
say
it.
People who live off-grid in communes.
Yeah.
Usually what happens is someone decides, let's all have sex with each other.
Yes.
And then they all fall out. Or two groups form and they all fall out.
Well, there'll be no sex in my commune. And, you know, even if it's a married couple, I will be enforcing a no-sex rule.
No, okay.
Yeah.
You'll be lying in between them.
Yeah. Wholesome.
I think I may have found out the most famous person to be living off-grid. I might be wrong because I'm sure there are loads of candidates.
Currently living off-grid?
Currently living off-grid, I believe.
Yeah. Okay, most
Winnie
famous
the Pooh.
Person.
Winnie the Pooh.
Okay, is it someone we could guess?
Someone who lives in America. Very famous.
Taylor one. Swift.
Not far off, actually quite far
Sabrina
off.
Sabrina Carpenter.
More male.
More male than Sabrina Carpenter. Good luck finding that.
Very, very narrow subset we're in now.
Joe Rogan.
Okay. Writer.
Writer. As in he's a writer, or that's more correct?
Stephen King.
Sorry. So even closer with Stephen King, someone who writes famously about rural America.
John Grisham?
Oh, now we're getting closer.
Rural America.
Yes. He writes about a small-time drifter drifting into your town, solving some problems.
What, Lee Child's British?
Lee Child lives in Wyoming.
Oh.
Lee Child. Sorry. Really deadballed that answer. Didn't I? Really hit that one into the net.
I just didn't pick him because he's British. But okay, he lives in America.
He has experience of life in America now. And he lives in this mad, huge estate in Wyoming. Okay, get this. Lou, I don't know if you'd be up for this.
Marrying him so I get my land. Yeah. Okay.
His postbox is 10 miles from his house.
No, thank you.
10 miles to the postbox.
How often does he send letters?
All the time. He's exclusively like Jane Austen. Lee Charles.
I guess he's not on email.
His nearest grocery shop, 45 miles away.
No.
If he needs to go and get some milk, it's a 90-mile round trip.
Is he making his own milk?
What are we saying?
That's not a euphemism. At that stage, you've got...
Yeah, you've got farm.
Well, you know what Jack Reacher's like. Lee Charles will just pick up a cow and drink...
Straight from the deep.
I don't know if he's got a farm, but basically he's in this place in Wyoming. Wyoming is the size of the UK, but the population is the combined populations of Cambridge, Canterbury, Carlisle and Chelmsford, as he's put it. It's just very, very sparsely populated. And he has a friend who he sometimes visits for dinner who lives 105 miles away.
Wow.
I'm not interested in that life.
It's so remote.
Yeah.
It's so far from... Well, it's 10 miles to your postbox.
Yeah. For someone as well who kind of puts out a book a year and is in the press and is doing interviews and presumably doing live
shows. Yeah, but he's not being distracted by constant letters, is he? So it's no one really can
write That's how you write a book a year.
A lot of people want to move to these places in case there's like a nuclear war or something or a zombie outbreak. Does that appeal to you, Lou? Or?
Are you sort of trying to get a gauge of how much of a nutter I am? In a polite way.
And will we be bottling all the piss? Or will we?
Because the reason I ask is like a lot of squillionaires will buy these sort of off-grid places and we'll have them in case the whole world goes to shit and they'll have a place to live.
Oh, if I had the money, I probably would.
Yeah, so this guy, Peter Thiel, you know him, squillionaire, asshole. he got New Zealand citizenship so that he could build a super bunker in New Zealand.
They're all building in New Zealand because they know that they're causing like climate damage to anyway.
They are. But there's a new book by a guy called Mark Lynas who looked at all the countries in the world and who would survive best a nuclear winter situation. And New Zealand is one of the worst places you can be.
Really?
Because they're very unself-sufficient in food.
Oh, wow.
They import a lot of food. So only 68% of Kiwis would survive a nuclear winter around the whole world.
Is that the bird, the Kiwi, or is it the,
it's the fruit?
The best places? Any of the best places to live?
Oh, go on.
Oh, is it... Someone once told me that it's in the UK. If you go like... Nope.
In the UK, 99% of people will die.
Oh, yeah.
99%? How come?
Because we're not self-sufficient with food.
But I want to focus on that 1%, James. That's that's who I'm
absolutely... You think change you want to see in the world. Yeah.
I've got 50 cans of beans under my stairs.
You will be the 1%, I reckon, living in your self-sufficient world.
Okay.
Oh, I'm highly allergic to beans. That's the only problem.
So someone that's self-sufficient in terms of food.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. Is it somewhere in...
And energy and various different things.
Oh, it's like Sweden or Norway or something like that. They're always...
I'll give you Iceland.
Thank you.
Okay. Oh, because they've got all the geothermal.
And they've got all those great isles of options.
That's good.
Australia, Iceland, Argentina, Paraguay, Uruguay and Costa Rica and Haiti are the places they're kind of self-sufficient in themselves that they can feed their whole population.
Yeah,
right. Because in Australia, you said, is sort of... I think they've got so much solar power, they've just said, we're going to give everyone 3 hours of free electricity.
And they've got very low population as well.
Yeah. Right.
Well, so Australia is a good place to go.
Yeah, and also they have lots of different sort of climates there. So you could grow lots of stuff in the north that you can't grow in the south and stuff in the south that you can't grow in the north. Right. So if you need all the different vitamins...
But if everyone was wiped out in England, I'd just sort of go along as well. I'm not that interested in living underground for 5 years on some tins.
But you live near the Ramsgate tunnels, which are perfectly, perfectly set. They're already set up. They've got the bunk beds left over from the war in there.
Oh, Fenella and I will fit in nicely.
I'll be running my cult. No touching it.
Okay, it's time for our final fact of the show, and that is my fact. My fact this week is that at Morrissey gigs, security have been known to pat down fans to search them for meat.
Wow.
The idea of a big security scanner going off, you just see the shape of a pork chop in someone's pocket.
Or a sausage.
Or a sausage, yeah. Or a sausage.
I do the same at my gigs, actually.
Do you?
Yeah. But I'm sort of wanting to find the meat.
Are you doing the pat-downs yourself?
Yeah, I am, yeah. I'm doing the pat-downs, yeah.
A meet and greet with loose enders has a very different meaning.
I pay you to meet and greet you.
So this is Morrissey, singer from the band The Smiths, who's had a very long solo career after their breakup, and he is a committed vegetarian and vegan, and he hates meat to the point that if it is even in the air, if he can even smell it at a gig, he will be known to walk off stage. So he always says that if he's going to play a venue, you're not allowed to sell meat in the venue for that specific gig. So if he was playing, let's say, the O2 in London, that would be one of the conditions that he would have. And in 2011, fans were reporting that as they were coming through the security barriers, men and women were patting them down, searching for meat amongst them.
I think it's fair enough, isn't it? It's his gig.
I think the searching is a bit... I think the searching is because... Once or twice, he's had sausages thrown at him on stage.
No.
Yeah, which I don't think is on. I do think that's poor form.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you need to search everyone for meat?
Just the people who look suspicious. They look like they might be packing a suspicious sausage.
But you can...
Anyone in tie-dye comes straight through.
But you can... Meat is, I would say, quite easy to smuggle.
You're made of meat. So there's no way they could do like a X-ray thing because your whole body's meat.
Mm. It's only if there's an extra bone, you would spot that. If someone's smuggling in a T-bone steak.
I agree. I think it's a bit much. But
it's a bit much. He said he doesn't identify with the term vegan. Like he's managed to find an even smaller subset of...
What does he identify with then?
He just says, I refuse to eat anything that had a mother. He says he's never had a curry or coffee or garlic.
Coffee got a mother?
I don't think that's the...
Not related.
But he said his diet consists of bread, potatoes, pasta and nuts. So it feels... It feels more like a sort of Channel 4 documentary about a fussy eater.
This is interesting, though, his influence, despite him being this character that people find quite
people
difficult.
People get annoyed with vegans. And yeah. My theory is that because they know that they shouldn't really be eating, something in them feels a bit icky about eating animals. They feel embarrassed about themselves.
That's possible.
Yeah.
Coachella, the big festival...
Oh, yeah.
Really tried hard to get a Smiths reunion, and there's been so much fallout between the members. Johnny Marr and Morrissey
don't get on,
and so Coachella said, we want you to get back, we're going to pay you a lot of money, and we will make Coachella a vegetarian experience. And he said, I would rather eat my own testicles.
Why?
Which is not very vegan. But he, because this is how much the band do not like each other, I'm afraid.
Oh dear, this will be us in 30 years.
I think last year, they almost got together, and Morrissey wanted them to get together because they got offered an insane amount of money, but Johnny Marr said no.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. He could have given it to the animal charities.
Morrissey has cancelled a gig in Iceland over their meat policy.
Okay. The supermarket.
Yeah, they do a lot of prawn rings, don't they? You know? Iceland, geothermally powered country, Iceland. But the venue just refused to stop selling meat for one day. And he said, I love Iceland and have waited a long time to return, but I shall leave the Harpak Concert Hall to their cannibalistic, flesh-eating bloodlust.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's not afraid to put together a pithy quote for a press release. I'll say that.
Yeah. I think it's crazy that the venue couldn't stop selling meat for a day, because it's so bad for the planet as well. You'd think, you know, just don't sell meat for a day. People will cope.
I think the thing is with Iceland, though, they have like a history of eating lots of meat because they've not been able to grow plants for many hundreds of years, especially in the winter. So they really do have a very big culture of eating
whales.
Whales, yeah, puffins, fish.
I think you're right, Lou. I think the vegan thing is really interesting because I think he's been very provocative in the way he presents it. Like, his tour gigs
will feature
videos of slaughterhouses.
Slaughterhouses are provocative.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think probably he sort of deliberately does it in an abrasive way, maybe, because he's trying to shock people
and
into
it. And no one's listening.
Well, I think it works on only a small percentage of people. I think people are likely to shut it out if something is so upsetting. I think like the veganism movement has had a bit of a stumble in recent years. It's a bit less popular than it was about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And just a lot of people have sort of thought, oh, the world is quite difficult now. I can't quite be bothered to cut out everything. Mm. And, you know, like vegetarians sometimes get stick for not being vegans and that kind of thing. Mm-mm. So I think it's tricky how you sort of softly people into it.
Yeah. Do you guys remember that Morrissey wrote a novel and it became quite well known for the fact that it contained possibly the worst sex scene of the year included in the book?
Did it win? There's an award for worst sex
scene. It did. It won the 2015 worst sex scene. So his book was called List of the Lost.
Could you read it in a sexy voice?
Yeah. Well, do you want to
no, read that?
Okay, here we go. Eliza and Ezra rolled together in the one giggling snowball of full-figured copulation, screaming and shouting as they playfully bit and pulled each other in a dangerous and...
I think it's good so far.
Yeah?
how's everyone else doing it?
In a clamorous rollercoaster coil of sexually violent rotation, with Eliza's breasts barrel-rolled across Ezra's howling mouth and painted, and the pained frenzy of his bulbous salutation, extenuating his excitement as it whacked and smacked its way into every muscle of Eliza's body except for the otherwise central zone.
This is a Tuesday night in my house. This is just Tuesdays.
That's mad.
I do think sexy novels are a bit less sexy when you have to ask people, can you tell me what this word is?
But that is insane. He's never had sex.
I'm sorry, I think
there's
that's
so
good.
Many, no, you like on. That? Okay, there are so many mixed metaphors in there.
Yeah.
They're like a snowball. And they're like a roller coaster.
It's a clamorous roller coaster coil, yeah.
And it's quite aggressive, not at all.
Sexually violent rotation is a bit... I mean, if your breasts are doing barrel rolls...
That's like the least... Imagine, like...
That's RAF stuff, isn't it? That's like... That's the red arrows, you know? and your bulbous salutation is a bit...
That's mad.
Mm.
Bulbous salutations feels like they might support the Smiths.
on Morrissey's books...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He has been a bit controversial... because he wrote an autobiography, a memoir, and it was published by Penguin Classics.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
So same list as Ovid, Homer's Odyssey, and he's basically said, I'll do a book, but only if it goes in straight as a Penguin Classic.
Yeah.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah.
A Penguin Classic. Sorry, I didn't really take notice of
that. Yeah. So
it didn't come out in hardback, which would be your traditional release. It was straight into a paperback with the classic look of it.
Yeah. Wow.
So, you know, Plato is they're on the same list.
And yeah. I think it's bold. And I think it got him a lot of publicity, didn't it?
Yeah.
Mostly negative.
But he's got a long history of writing. So before he was a pop star, he wrote unsolicited scripts for Coronation Street.
Did they go with it or not?
He sent them a script where the Rovers Return installs a jukebox, and they did not go with it.
It's basically fan fiction, isn't it?
It's basically fan fiction. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I found one other example, just while we're still on Morrissey/musicians, of people who are very strict vegan/vegetarians to the point where it almost seems a bit awkward. K.D. Lang.
Oh, yeah.
K.D. Lang once refused to meet the singer Meatloaf.
Because of his name.
That's so amazing. Come on.
Stop it.
It was an interview from Meatloaf where he said, I was a vegetarian for 10 years and I was sitting next to Jon Bon Jovi at an awards thing. And I said, oh, man, I'd love to meet K.D. Lang. I'd really love to meet her. They went to find out if that's okay. She said, no, his name is Meatloaf.
But he was a vegetarian at the time?
Possibly he'd lapsed at that point, okay. But he had been a vegetarian at some point for 10 years.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I think that's a bit strict of KD there.
Yeah.
While we're on sort of pop stars and stuff, before we get into veganism, I had a look at some other riders that people have. Mm. So Kanye West, apparently, when he played later with Jules Holland, that he must have his dressing room carpet ironed.
Wow.
Eminem, apparently, when he played at a festival in Northern Ireland, insisted on a koi carp pond.
Okay.
And according to TMZ, there's a rapper called DMX who I'm not massively familiar with.
Oh, yeah. He's a biggie, though.
He is big. For every rider, he wants a bottle of Hennessy and three boxes of condoms.
Three boxes? Which boxes?
Three boxes.
Sometimes the boxes are fewer.
Even if there was three in a box, Andy, you reckon you can get through nine before a gig?
Not before the gig.
When I'm at the Bill Murray, it's a similar story. It seats 90. You know? I'm optimistic. That's mad.
Crazy. I was wondering if he might be using them to carry water, because they're quite good for that.
We've ascertained that they're good for water.
I heard that Drake puts, when he finishes off in a condom, because he doesn't want, you know, kids with some, like, you know, stranger
multiple
that
kids.
He's sleeping with, he puts like chili flakes in the remnants or something so they can't shove it up them.
Oh. Wait.
That's what I heard.
So people might take the condom
and then shove.
And chili flakes is going to stop them. I mean, if you're mental enough to want to do the first part of that, do you think the chili flakes would stop you?
Condoms are naturally spermicide covered, aren't they?
The spermicides on the outside of a condom.
So it's spice. So
I just thought it was all
putting that on back to front.
How many kids you
inside
got?
Inside out, not back to front.
Yeah, well, is that true?
That's what I've heard. Is any of it true? Because the rumours of the riders, you could just make that up, couldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I wouldn't be 100% certain that any of the things I said are true.
Well, you've toured, Lou. You recently toured.
I did. The only thing I asked for was not a plastic bottle of water. So either like a jug, a filter jug.
A condom full.
Yeah. Or like cans, I guess, of water.
Yeah, okay.
That's fair.
Because I don't know all the plastic bottles.
Yeah, fair enough.
I guess I'm a good person. I guess I'm just, what I'm saying here subtly is like, I'm a good guy.
You're the Morrissey of comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But better.
Joke alert. Does Eminem ask on his rider to have all the Van Halens removed from his dressing room?
I love it.
Very good. Joke.
Only the brown ones.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it. That is all of our facts. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to get in contact with any of us about the things that we have said over the course of this podcast, we're all online. You can get us on Instagram. That's where I am, on @Schreiberland. James?
My Instagram is no such thing as James Harkin.
Andy?
Mine is @AndrewHunterM.
Yeah, and Lou.
You just search Lou Sanders and it will come up. And I've just done a Substack note and it's got two likes, so join in.
Oh, I think that's the first Substack we've got.
Yeah, be that third like.
Be that third, yeah. Well, yeah. Cults, they start small.
Well,
but
well
yeah.
It's worse because I've got over 4,000 subscribers, but they're not into what I'm doing, I suppose. Anyway.
Yeah. Or if you want to get to us as a group, you can message us on podcast@qi.com. Send us an email there with anything you want to chat about, any extra facts that you have. We often go through the inbox and Andy will cherry pick out the best of those to bring to our mailbag episodes that we do called Drop Us a Line, which can be found in a very secret place. Lou, it's called Club Fish. It's a secret, exclusive members club.
It's a cult.
It's a cult.
No sex.
There's not a flicker of sex going on there.
I'll not be joining.
No bulbous salutations, I'm afraid.
And yeah, we will read out the best of those emails on there. So check out Club Fish. You can check that out by going to nosuchthingasafish.com. We've also got other stuff up there like merchandise that you can buy. We've got all of our previous episodes. But if not, just come back again next week because we will be here with another episode. We will see you then. Goodbye.